Welcome to Reigning in the Bulls with Michael Marks. Today's guest is Eliza Pan. She was the project manager of the operations team at Amazon. In this Reigning in the Bulls episode, Eliza will discuss the campaign challenge against Amazon to reduce its carbon footprint, emissions, and address its climate impact with a comprehensive company-wide plan. This groundbreaking campaign was titled Amazon Employees for Climate Change.
Eliza Pan, and thanks for taking the time to talk about your involvement in the employee campaign at Amazon.com. Could you give us just a brief background of your employment there and what your position was, and then we'll launch into what the issues were that you were dealing with?
So I worked at Amazon for just under 6 years, and I was on three different teams throughout that time. At the time that I got involved with the employee organizing, I was a PM in the operations team for Amazon Retail. What the issue was that what I and other employees were really passionate about was the climate crisis, was about doing something around the climate crisis. And for me personally, it came from a lot of different places, but you know, the my hometown where I grew up and where my parents live still in Southern California is a big logistics hub, not just Amazon, but Amazon has a very large presence there in terms of warehouses. There's a lot of warehouse pollution, a lot of diesel trucks, you know, hundreds or thousands every day. And when I got the job at Amazon in Seattle at the corporate headquarters, you know, the kind of disparity was really stark for me, you know, in terms of air quality and amenities in Seattle versus my hometown. And so working at Amazon, you know, I started realizing like, oh, well, this is all connected to the climate crisis and how the effects of the climate crisis affect people differently, depending on your background, your race, your income. And so I started trying to see what I could do while I was at Amazon about Amazon's climate impact. And through that, started meeting other employees who are also really passionate about the climate crisis and were interested in also wanting to do something. You know, we weren't sure what yet, but we knew we wanted to do something about Amazon's climate impact. And so that's how we all came together.
Was there any formal report that you guys prepared or had or referred to about Amazon's climate impact, and particularly in those warehouse districts, which sound like that's where it wasn't just climate, it was pollution in those districts?
At the time, Amazon did not have any carbon footprint reporting. It actually stood out amongst its peers for not reporting any emission data. Mm-hmm. And so what we wanted in the beginning was at least just a plan, right? A report of like, what exactly is Amazon doing? And so we decided to file a shareholder resolution because as Amazon employees, as part of our compensation, we also got company stock. And so we decided to use our position both as employees and shareholders to file a shareholder resolution that asked Amazon to prepare a report for how it was addressing its climate impact, including its carbon emission reporting. And prior to us really starting to ask Amazon for this information, there was really no criticism about Amazon's climate impact in the public discourse. You know, Amazon would put out a few press releases, a handful really, about its solar panel purchases, but there was no holistic, comprehensive plan about Amazon's overall impact. And that's what we were trying to ask for. We in the beginning, all we were asking for was just a plan. We weren't even asking for specific targets yet, because at that point we, you know, we thought, well, Amazon should just tell us their plan. Maybe they have a plan. And it became clear very quickly that there was no such plan.
So it sounds like you might have met with some senior management people to ask about the plan prior to filing the shareholder resolution, and then discovered that there was no plan, or at least not a plan that actually addressed the problem in the way to the extent you wanted it addressed.
No, actually, we met with senior leadership after we filed the shareholder resolution.
Okay.
Prior to filing it, there were some, you know, Amazon had started an internal company program for employees to engage on issues of sustainability. And unfortunately, it was very weak. Essentially what it was, you know, anybody could sign up to be an Amazon sustainability ambassador, as they called it. What the major project for these ambassadors was to encourage recycling and composting at the corporate offices, like, you know, amongst your coworkers, which is, you know, not a bad thing to do, but the scope of that was just very small. That was the outlet that the company encouraged employees, like, if you care about climate change, if you care about sustainability and this company's sustainability, you should be part of this thing. And they try to kind of funnel employees to this company's sponsored program. We felt like, well, this is not material. You know, that's basically after that, we were like, well, we need to file a shareholder resolution to get leadership's attention, because they clearly just kind of want to funnel employees to this, you know, box that's this big when the problem is, you know, this big.
What did the shareholder resolution ask the company to do?
All it asked was for the company to provide a plan, a report, basically, for the company to create a report that outlined its plan for its carbon impact, its carbon emissions across the whole company, which at that time it had never done before.
Was there, after you filed the resolution, was there any meeting subsequent to that with senior management? Because often they will challenge a resolution, at least try to deal with the ones who filed it to see if they could make it go away.
Yes, exactly. And that we did. That did happen. We had two meetings with senior leadership after we filed the resolution. And, you know, honestly, the first meeting that we went into that meeting, we thought, oh, this is great. Like, we finally can get to talk to senior leadership about, you know, the importance of addressing the company's climate impact and having a holistic plan across the whole company rather than siloed plans for, you know, little tiny parts of the company. And that meeting was a really kind of a wake-up call for us, because the senior leaders were very dismissive. It was clear that they did not think it was a priority, that having this reporting, having this kind of plan was a priority. We were honestly, quite a few of us were left that meeting feeling pretty shocked, because we thought, oh, we could have a, you know, we could have a good faith conversation about what was needed. And we can understand, like, where leadership was thinking, like what progress might have already been made. And we left that meeting feeling pretty shocked that the leaders seemed to have blind spots and didn't think it was a matter of importance. After that meeting, we realized we needed to do something to wake them up, because they weren't listening, and they thought that they had it all in hand, that what they were doing was enough, when it clearly wasn't. And so that's when we decided to write an open letter to Jeff and the board of directors and organize employees to sign this letter. We ultimately got, I think it was 8,000 signatures on this letter. And in the midst of drafting and collecting signatures for this letter, we didn't make the letter public yet. But Amazon found out that we were, you know, gathering signatures for this letter. Senior leadership found out. We had another meeting. In that meeting, they told us that that Amazon was going to announce Shipment Zero, as they call it, which was Amazon's first ever commitment to reduce shipping emissions. First ever commitment to say, yes, we have a target of reducing shipment emissions. However, the name is a little bit misleading, because they call it Shipment Zero, but the commitment is actually to reduce 50% of Amazon's shipping emissions to net zero. So it really should be called Shipment 50, but you know, that aside, in this meeting, they told us, okay, you know, we hear you, we're going to release Shipment Zero. Can you withdraw your resolution now? To your point, right? They were trying to kind of make it go away. And we said, well, why should we withdraw it? And they said, well, because we announced Shipment Zero. So now we've met your concerns. And so you don't need this shareholder resolution anymore. We were thinking, well, you've kind of missed the point, right? We're talking about a holistic plan for the entire company. Shipping emissions is just one part of the company. You know, there's AWS, there's devices like Kindle and Alexa, and there's all sorts. There's the company is not just retail shipping. And so we said, no, we're not going to withdraw the resolution because we still think you need a comprehensive plan for the whole company, not just for one part of the company. We decided to publish the letter that we had gotten thousands of signatures on because we realized that the leadership was not, they didn't get it. They didn't understand the gravity of the climate crisis and did not understand the scale of the response that was needed. The type of response that's needed is an entire company mobilization, not just one part, one arm of the company.
It sounds like there were different parts of the campaign, which is typical. You know, one part is the petition with 8,000 signatures, which is substantial. So there's that piece of organizing. And then it sounds like a second part was the shareholder, at least the threat of the shareholder resolution, and then ultimately the reality of the shareholder resolution. Sounds like there was also kind of at least a nominal negotiations team, a team of you that met with the senior management, discuss whether you'd file the resolution, whether you'd make the petitions public, et cetera. Were there any others, for example, in some campaigns or organizing efforts, there'll be some kind of a demonstration or a rally or something to make it more visible and feel like you're turning up the heat? Or were there any other pieces to this organizing?
Shareholder resolutions are ultimately on the company's essentially ballot, right, for at the annual shareholder meeting. And so we organized, I want to say it was around 50 to 60 people to employees to go to the shareholder meeting. And typically these meetings are very kind of, yeah, you could say boring. You know, they're very like very structured, very boring, not many people attend in person. And so the fact that we had, I think it might have been more than 60, but you know, roughly somewhere between like 60 to 100 people show up to this meeting. And we were, because typically very few people show up to these meetings, but the entire board of directors is there and the entire SVP team essentially is there. And SVP at Amazon is basically the C-suite. So Jeff Bezos was there and, you know, all his deputies and the board of directors. This is kind of the one time a year they have to, you know, present to all the shareholders. We all wore the same thing and we went into this shareholder meeting and it was an extremely impactful time because it was very clear to everyone in the room. This was an organized effort by employees and who all the employees are. It was very clear that we were there for a shared purpose. We planned at various points in the meeting to stand up in unison and ask questions as well during the meeting. I mean, we have some recordings of one of their core employee organizers. She was given time to give a speech because as a shareholder, when you file a shareholder resolution, you are allotted time for a speech. And that speech was extremely powerful, calling out Jeff Bezos and the leadership team for not taking action because they had recommended to all the shareholders that they vote no on our resolution when all our resolution was asking for was a report. So it was extremely powerful. People were visibly moved by the speech. Including not just employees, but including investors, because you typically in shareholder meetings, who shows up are, like I said, the board and the C-suite and also major institutional investors. You know, a handful of some kind of stockholders, right? But mostly it's institutional investors and the board and the C-suite. Our speech and our coordinated movements made a visible impact on investors and employees alike. And we got, you know, we definitely got some coverage of that because typically, like I said, these events are pretty staid. Reporters do report on these events because, you know, it's of interest to the investor community. But since what we did was so out of the norm, showing up to the meeting in, you know, in a coordinated fashion, disrupting the meeting, asking questions, those are all things that are out of the norm. And it was, frankly, very, it was scary for a lot of people to do that, for a lot of employees to do that, to go visibly against your employer. But people still did it because of kind of the gravity of the situation, because of the clear lack of vision and clear blind spots from leadership, and realizing, you know, I think a lot of us are trained to think that people in leadership positions are the smartest in the room. They know best about what's going on. And to some degree, you know, that is true to some degree in some matters. But when it comes to matters that people are more intimately familiar with, like the impacts of the climate crisis, leadership does have blind spots. And I think it was a realization for a lot of employees that, like, leaders don't actually always know what's best. And actually, leaders are sometimes wrong, and they need employees to tell them when they're wrong. And that's our responsibility as employees, is to hold the leadership accountable, you know? And that's really, I think a lot of us felt that's how ultimately we make the company better, by holding leaders accountable. And so the fear that I think a lot of people have when you think about, oh, I'm speaking out against my employer, my boss, my company, that's kind of what society and what our professional culture has, like, taught us to believe. But I think what we learned is that actually it is necessary to speak out at sometimes. And if you don't, then we'll just be complicit, you know, working at this company. And so it's necessary to speak out when people, when you realize that leadership has blind spots, and they will.
Great. And it seems like your generation is more willing to do that, and more concerned about climate change, for example, more concerned about diversity. And so I'm wondering if we can expect to probably see this in more companies down the road here.
I mean, I sure hope so. With the climate crisis and with a lot of other issues, it's becoming very clear to people everywhere, for example, with the climate crisis, that it's here. It can't be ignored anymore, because, you know, I have family and myself who has been affected by climate disasters, and more people, either they themselves or they have family or friends who have been affected by climate disasters. And also the growing understanding that companies have lied to us for a very long time about the climate crisis. Fossil fuel companies, obviously, but even companies that are not fossil fuel companies have obscured their contributions to the climate crisis for a long time. Whether it's about the climate crisis or about other issues, I think more and more people are realizing that the companies we work for have a responsibility. And it's a question of, like, well, who is going to make these companies take responsibility? Waiting for the government, unfortunately. I mean, I think government legislation is important and needed. But I think we've also seen throughout history that government follows political will and public pressure and public will. Public policy is always going to be just a little bit behind what is needed in the moment. And also it needs to start somewhere. You know, I'm not a politician, I'm not a legislator, but I am a employee at a company that has a big impact. I think the question to ask ourselves, and you know, your question about generation, I'm sure there is some generational differences, but people who have been involved with our campaign came from all generations. Amazon has a relatively young workforce, probably compared to most of corporate America, but the people, you know, who were part of the shareholder resolution, the open letter, and we haven't even talked about the walkout yet. You know, there were people from all generations as part of that. I think that it's about coming to realize, like, we have real power as employees. If we want to see some kind of change in the world, we can be the ones to be part of making that change.
So there was the petition, there was the shareholder resolution, there was an organizing of employees to show up at the shareholder annual meeting. And there was also, and I did hear about the walkout, and that was an international event, as I recall. But Amazon in Seattle showed up in force on this one. Can you give us just a brief sense of that and how people organized to do that?
Essentially, after the shareholder action that I mentioned, where we showed up at the shareholder meeting in force, coordinated and organized, Amazon voted down our shareholder resolution. But we got a number of major institutional investors to side with us, but Amazon still did not want to create this comprehensive report that we were asking for. What was very obvious to us, Amazon was going to fight this and continue to fight this. And so we realized that we needed to escalate the pressure. And that's when we called after the shareholder meeting. I think it was maybe a month or two after that, we called for a walkout to coordinate with the International Day of Climate Action. We announced that walkout publicly because we wanted other employees to know that we were doing this and we wanted them to join us. Essentially, yeah, we called for a walkout. Amazon knew that we were calling for this walkout. And we spent a very crazy couple of months prepping for this walkout. 24 hours before the walkout, we heard that Amazon, that Jeff Bezos, who was the CEO at the time, was going to hold a press conference the following day. We knew that something was happening, that something was going on. Lo and behold, surprise, surprise, Jeff Bezos announced the climate pledge. I think it was the morning before the walkout, I think is when he announced it, with a big press conference in DC. We were obviously thrilled because we knew that this was a response to our pressure of walkout. And we were thrilled. And at the same time, we were also kind of, you know, rolling our eyes like, oh, of course he would decide to announce this hours before our walkout is about to start, you know, oh, is that a coincidence? You know, I think not. You wonder, it's like, oh, well, why did he decide to announce this? Well, obviously it's, you know, to try to diffuse it, right? But we held the walkout. We walked out anyway. We had over 3,000 employees walk out all over the world. The biggest contingent was obviously in Seattle, but we organized employees all over the world in Amazon offices, from, you know, Canada to Italy to Germany, the UK, like, you know, all over the world, to South Africa, all over the US too, California, New York. I think it was a really big moment for a lot of people who had never done any kind of action like that before. But I think it was also important for a lot of people to clearly communicate that this was an issue that we really cared about, that Amazon's climate impact was really important to us, and that we were watching our leadership for how they would respond to the climate crisis.
Did Jeff Bezos' announcement constitute a solution that the employees were looking for, such that they could say, okay, you know, we won't file the same shareholder resolution next year, for example?
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, yes, it did. It was a concession, right? It was like, okay, Amazon is listening. They released what they called the climate pledge, right? Which was a comprehensive company-wide plan about its emissions. So yes, some people decided not to walk out because they saw the announcement and they were like, oh, well, okay, we, you know, the threat of the walkout, we got what we were wanting. Yes, I think the climate pledge is a win for the employee movement. And I think it's undeniable that the climate pledge would not be what it is today if it were not for our efforts and the employee movement. At the same time, we had very specific demands. So we've been talking about the shareholder resolution, and our demand was about, we need a report, right? But with our open letter, we took it a step further, because with shareholder resolutions, there's a limited set of what you can ask for from a company. There's a limitation. We were within the bounds of that to ask for a report. But when it came to the open letter and the walkout, our demands were much more than just a report. We wanted actual commitments to reach zero emissions, not just net zero, true zero emissions. And a big part of that is because what we know about net zero is that it still allows companies to continue polluting. Mm-hmm. So places like my hometown, places all over the world, all over the country, there you can still pollute and have people be impacted by that pollution, you know, having elevated risks of heart disease, respiratory illness from the pollution. There are investigations and studies about how this pollution has affected community health. Amazon warehouses have affected community health all over the country. So anyway, we know that net zero is not enough, because not only does it still allow the company to continue polluting, you're still emitting carbon. Most recent IPCC reports have shown that countries like the US need to get our emissions down extremely quickly. When you think about the companies or the countries that have the resources to be able to get its emissions down quickly, are countries like the US and companies like Amazon that have a lot more resources than most other companies and even other countries. The climate pledge was, we definitely see that as like, yes, Amazon is listening, but it had significant gaps. It didn't meet the demands that we had wanted around true zero emissions, around justice for communities that have been disproportionately affected by Amazon's pollution, around AWS actually working for and with fossil fuel companies to extract and explore and aid them in exploration for more oil. As you know, with the IPCC report, all the oil that we already know about, if all the oil companies did no more exploration and only tapped the oil wells where they already that they already know about, we'd be blowing past climate stability, blowing past.
No, that's good. Thank you. And is there still a core of employees, for example, that are tracking Amazon's progress on this, possibly trying to get them to raise the bar beyond net zero, for example, because oftentimes the organizing results in at least a core that kind of represents the employees' interests and tracks the outcome.
I think what we learned through this process is that you need to hold companies accountable. Mm-hmm. Left to their own devices, companies and leadership at these companies will kind of take the road that is seen as maybe most efficient or least disruptive to business as usual. And so, yes, the employees continue because they know they have to continue move Amazon forward on addressing its climate emissions and toward true zero and not just net zero, toward not working with oil and gas.
Okay. The big positive lessons, if you were to say, okay, the takeaways and the advice for other employees who may do this, here's some things that you really like, bullet points that you definitely should look at and consider adding into your campaign effort or mm-hmm. your organizing.
Wow, there are so many ways I could take this. it's really important to build up your crew. You know, in the beginning, to really, you know, you can't go at this alone. No one can. So you need to find yourself a crew of people who are going to be in it with you, and that you feel like you can trust and that care about not just the issue, but care about you as like care about each other, mm-hmm. because it's going to be hard and it'll be hard and the company is going to want you to go away. And the only way you're going to be able to get through it is if you have people around you who you care about personally, and you know that they care about you too, especially in the very beginning. That's the most important thing, is to find the people who are going to be in the trenches with you. All the other stuff is important too. Like, you know, the strategy, the planning, like all of that is really important too, but all that will go so much better and be so much easier if you have people around you that you trust each other and that you feel like they really care about you. That's definitely what comes to mind initially, because this is it's a hard thing to do, but it's necessary. And so you're going to want to be doing it with people that you like and that you care about. That solidarity can build upon, because things are going to come at you. The company is going to want you to go away. Companies are kind of structured in a way that they want to continue with business as usual. It'll be tough, but it is possible, especially when you have people around you that, again, you trust and that you care about. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most important piece of advice. Could go in a lot of different ways, but I think ultimately that's the most important thing to start with.
Well, what's interesting too, when you talked about escalation, there's the petition. You get 8,000 people. That's part, I would imagine, a good first step in terms of bringing people together. And then there's kind of the open letter, potentially takes it more public. Then there's the shareholder resolution. Then there's the walkout. It seems like just what we've learned from campaigns over the years is the ability and the willingness to escalate. But you're mm-hmm. right, build that base, because you absolutely have got to have something to build on as you escalate.
Yes, yes. And I think escalation is going to be part of probably almost any campaign, because companies are going to want to ignore you for as long as possible until you make it impossible for them to ignore you. That escalation along the way is about building that pressure on the company, and also building your own power of like getting more people to take part, to be part of your crew. It's not just about the actions along the way. It's about the community you're building along the way that makes those following subsequent actions possible, because you have a community. And yes, escalation is absolutely going to need to be a part of it, because companies are going to want to ignore you for as long as possible.
You know, one of the takeaways, I, or at least possible takeaways too, is that question of, do employees feel empowered after engaging in a campaign like this and getting these kinds of results, to be more willing to address other issues that are not just in the company's controlled box, but are the larger issues? Do you have that sense with the employees who were engaged in this campaign?
Yeah, I think people are coming to work and realizing that we can't just be robots who just work and, you know, we only care about work. You know, we're full three-dimensional human beings who care about a lot of things. It's extremely difficult or impossible to kind of shut off a part of yourself when you're at work, especially when the company you work for is directly playing a role in issues that you care about, whether it's about the climate crisis or about racial equity or about sexism. It's impossible to ignore that where your workplace, your employer has an impact on these issues that you care about. I think it's about working at these companies. It's a process of coming to see, because I work here, I could make a difference on these issues that I care about because of my position here. And so how do I do that? And it's a process of, I think, coming to realize, well, you know, I can do that via kind of these official company channels, like I was talking about with the sustainability ambassadors. And there's limitations to that. How do I think creatively, think out of the box about how I can pull, which levers I can pull while doing it with the community around me? That's kind of, I think, the question that you're kind of always asking yourself.
Did it help along the way to get any help from outside entities? Because obviously there's a lot of groups out there, mm-hmm. advocacy mm-hmm. groups concerned about climate,
yeah.
concerned about equity and mm-hmm. Diversity. Does that help? And are there limits in how you do and how you engage them?
Yeah, I think it absolutely helps. And again, at the end of the day, it comes down to relationships and connections that you have with people. I was a volunteer at 350 Seattle well before my time, you know, with organizing with other Amazon employees. And through my volunteer efforts with 350, I met, you know, the community of people who were at 350 and learned about, you know, the campaigns they were working on that were not related to Amazon at all. You know, it was about fossil fuel projects in the Pacific Northwest. But because I met activists and campaigners through 350 Seattle, you know, when all the Amazon efforts were starting up, through those relationships, I and others were able to learn from those other experiences and try to apply them to, you know, what we were doing, because, you know, nobody is taught in school, like, and you know, maybe it's starting to change, but nobody is taught in school how to run a, you know, how to run a campaign. Mm-hmm. That's really something that, you learn later, or maybe when you're in school, maybe you're part of student organizing, you know, there's been lots of student organizing recently at the UCs, University of California's, and at Yale. So maybe you were involved in to some degree of with those types of efforts, but I think most students have not been, at least my generation. It was absolutely helpful to have people who, again, it goes back to the relationships, who cared about me and others as people, because we already had relationships prior to all the organizing efforts. And so they wanted to support what I was doing, not just because they believed in the mission, but because we knew each other as people first and as comrades first in other efforts. And I think we benefited a lot from learning about and getting their support for our campaigns, 100%, like, you know, helping us with the walkout, helping us share their experiences in other campaigns. It's absolutely necessary to get expert advice, but I think it's a question of like, well, who, right? And it's like, well, who do you, again, it comes back to who do you have relationships with? Who is your community? Who trusts you and you trust them?
Hey, one last question. Have you seen a ripple effect in other companies as a result of what Amazon Employees for Climate Change did? I'm curious.
Yeah.
One of the things we really think about strategically is as a movement, we don't have a lot of resources, so that when we do something, we want it to be like a stone in a pond, you know, that it really has a ripple effect.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes. We have very specific examples of that, and we've also seen it. So, you know, we know of at least one, but actually multiple, but we know the intimate details of one company where somebody who worked there was really inspired by our efforts and reached out to us and asked us for help for doing the same thing at her company. And so we did provide some help to her, and she ultimately led a open letter effort and also kind of a disruption action confrontation at her company's all hands to ask their leadership, you know, why they were still working with oil and gas companies for advertising. That was a very specific example that we knew they were directly inspired by us and forced their CEO to go on record to talk about when they were going to stop working with oil and gas companies. But we also know, you know, from the walkout, we were not the only tech company who participated, but that was only because we announced it first. And it's really hard to be the first to do anything. It's also really hard to be the second to do anything, because, you know, one person can be out there saying, I'm going to do this thing. But actually being the second person is also very hard, because you're making the decision to like join this crazy person in doing this thing. But once there's two of you, then it starts to look like a movement. Then it starts to look less crazy. Mm-hmm. And so actually being the second person to do something, I would argue, is almost as important as being the first person to do something. We saw that with the walkout, with the other tech companies saying that they were going to join in. And honestly, when other tech companies, after we announced that we as Amazon employees were going to walk out, other tech companies like Twitter and Facebook employees also announced they were going to walk out. And actually, because they announced that, not only did other tech companies then join in, and like Microsoft, but it also further encourages the employees at the original at Amazon to say like, oh, Twitter employees are doing this too. Facebook is doing this too. Oh, we're not just crazy ones doing this by ourselves. This is like a real thing that we should all really do. So you kind of feed off each other, right? So it's like ripple effects, like you're saying, beyond our campaign, but actually those ripple effects in turn like amplify our own efforts, and then therefore the ripple effects become even larger, because mm-hmm. the original efforts are bigger, and so yeah, we saw that at other tech companies, we saw that at advertising companies, at gaming companies. People reached out to us asking us for help, and you know, we tried our best to help where we could, but we were also like resource constrained of like how much help we could give. Absolutely, there were ripple effects even beyond just the walkout. I think to this day, there are people who have been transformed by their experience in being part of the walkouts and carry that forward to the different areas, different whether they're still at Amazon or at other companies, they carry that with them.
Yeah, I do think that it can be life-changing for many people and very empowering to realize, wow, you can stand up and speak truth to power.
Right, right.
Let me ask, is there any last comment or thing you'd like to just add to this that I've maybe haven't asked you about, or just kind of a summary point?
I think this is the audience for this is students and other employees who might be interested in taking action or, trying to make change, right? I've said this already, but I'll just say it again because I think it is very important. Really think about building a community and doing this in community. Lone wolves are not going to make it. It's a really transformational and really life-changing and valuable, I think, experience. And it's really hard. If something is hard, it's like, well, that's worth it. It's worth it. And what makes it possible? You start thinking like, okay, what's our strategy? What's our plan? Like, what's our plan of action? Like, yes, that's all important, but you will get there. The first thing to really think about and really be intentional about is your community that you're doing it with, your team, your crew, the people that are going to be going in with you. I think it's about creating a community of care about each other, a community of like curiosity about each other, and really actually forming relationships with the people that you're going to be doing it with.
Great. Eliza, thank you so much for taking this time. And congratulations to you and the Amazon employees. And thank you for taking on this campaign. Congratulations for escalating it and staying with it and for generating the ripple effect. And I do, as a person who's been involved in corporate campaigns for over 30 years, I see this as a real iconic campaign, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to someone who was really on the inside and give us an insight into that. So you've done that, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for your support. And to your point about the ripple effects, it continues at Amazon. The organizing continues, and there are other issues that people care about. I feel very lucky to have been a part of it, and also really incredible to see the continued ripple effects at Amazon and at other companies. So thank you for supporting and making this happen.
We'll see if we can accelerate the ripple effect with the next generation of students out there right now in university.
Yeah, we need them. We need them. We need everyone.
We definitely need them.
Thank you for listening to Reigning in the Bulls with Michael Marks. To learn more about Amazon employees and how they take action against Amazon's global climate reach, please visit them at amazonemployeesforclimatejustice.medium.com. You can also learn more about other groundbreaking campaigns at reigninginthebulls.org. Thank you for listening to the Reigning in the Bulls podcast. Unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited and may not be used without express written permission. CEI, Corporate Ethics International, and Reigning in the Bulls, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.